This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Good afternoon. It is The Bigger Picture and it's Mira Sivasodi. When it comes to your child learning how to read and speak English, it is surprising how much children pick up from interaction with their parents. Even something as simple as reading a bedtime story can vastly increase their level of English. But how many parents actually take time to do that? And as a parent, how do you get empowered to read and speak English for your child's benefit? Dr. Elsie Chin, an English language trainer, joins me. Welcome, Elsie.
Good afternoon. Thank you for having me.
Elsie, just tell me a little bit more about how you got into education. It's quite interesting. I mean, it goes back, what, almost 28 years, I understand.
Yes. Of course, the first step is I'm greatly inspired by the teachers I've had. And when I say teachers that I've had, I have a convent school education. Mm-hmm. Yeah?
So do
and
I.
Yes, and I don't mean just a good convent education from the nuns, but also I had very different teachers then. Teachers who actually do nothing except teach, and they teach us very well, yeah, and they do share with us what it takes to become a good student. And that good student is not just academic achievement. It would be great if we have that, but it's a lot of character building, I must say.
Okay. And it's been 28 years now.
Yes.
You obviously feel that there is a need for parents to play a big role when it comes to the English language and children of today.
Mm. Oh, definitely. You see, whenever a child doesn't do well, most parents would, the first thing they do is, okay, they didn't get good teachers. Yeah, let me clarify, there are no good or bad teachers, just trained or untrained. Yeah, and also teachers out there, if you're listening to this, you shouldn't rest on your laurels and think, yeah, so, you know, there are no good or bad teachers. But if you take on the job, the responsibility of being a teacher, you jolly well do what you're supposed to do and teach, you see. But teaching, again, you do not go into class thinking what you're going to teach, but what your children or the students are going to learn in that particular lesson.
Mm-hmm. And how do you even go about, yes, you know, formulating your classes, or how are you going to conduct your classes that way?
If the teacher starts thinking, going to class, what the children are going to learn instead of what they are going to teach, then the focus is now on the children. Yeah, they, for example, if they are going into class to teach speaking skills, yeah, it's not the way they should speak, emulating the teacher or some model that they want the children to emulate, of course. What they could do is they use cartoon strips where they remove the speech that is contained in the bubbles and get children to put in their own. Yeah, and even if it comes to writing, you know, I cannot imagine speech without listening, without a little bit of writing, because that's what speaking is all about. Mm-hmm. You speak, you think, and you speak what is in your mind, mm-hmm, right? But again, there is some kind of filtering system that we do have to apply, and it's always inbuilt. So when it comes to teaching, and if the child is to learn speaking skills, there are lots of ways a teacher can do that. But what is important is to achieve the task, with the objective, which is to speak, you see. And if a teacher goes in knowing that her job is to make sure that the children learn to speak, then the focus on the activities will always be how to get the children to speak. Mm-hmm. You know, if the teacher goes in thinking, I want them to write, I'm going to teach writing, then it's like, okay, when you write your essays, you have to do this and that. And then it becomes so diagnostic, analytical, you know, and even when they give comments, it has a lot of analysis of where they went wrong, you know. But if it is the other way around, if the teacher says, okay, today is writing and I want you to write in paragraphs, I want you to write in the past tense, and I want you to write a book review. So then when the child submits the work, as long as it's a book review or a film review, depending on what the teacher wants, and it is written in paragraphs and it is in the past tense, the teacher can always identify the correct objectives, the correct demonstration of the activity, and tell the child that, hey, you have done all this. Well done. You know, you wrote in paragraphs, you wrote in past tense. But if there are mistakes, the teacher could always just identify one and point out that the past tense of this word should have been this.
Right.
You see, this is a very different focus from teaching them, you must write an essay, the essay must contain five paragraphs, and it has to, you know, and then all the other implements or in of a good essay.
Right. Teachers aside, how much do parents play a role when it comes to your child's development when it comes to language?
Well, if we put it at how many hours a child spends in school with teachers and different teachers, and the amount of time the child spends with the parents, I think the parent or parents play twice as much in terms of importance when it comes to bringing up a child. The parents can't just think that by enrolling the child in some premium schools or you know, great supplementary or classes, and grade, of course, is very subjective. Now, it doesn't mean that the role of the parents is now undertaken by a third party, you see. So it doesn't work that way. It doesn't mean if you enroll your children in classes that your friend's child has progress, it is going to work or have the same effect on your child. It doesn't work that way. Water will find its own level. Each child is an individual. It's different. Parents must always take an interest. By saying taking an interest, for one, the parent must research the school, go and have a look at the school, talk to the teachers, look at the books, the materials that the child will be using or will be learning from, right? And then when the child comes home, check with the child, what did you learn today? And when it comes to reading, the parent can always do a reading with the child and said, okay, shall we read for 15 minutes? Okay. And then pretend that there are some words you don't know. Ask the child, hey, I'm having problem with this. Can you help me Google and read to me? And if there is a sentence, could you read that sentence to me? How else can I use this word in a sentence? Play teacher student with the child.
Right. And is it ever too young to start reading to your child?
Oh, no. As long as the child shows an interest in reading, there's never too late or too early to start.
Okay.
Never.
That's interesting. What if they don't show an interest? Then what do you do?
If they don't show an interest, there's always an interest or a hobby that interests a child. Okay. It could be Lego, it could be computer games, anything, okay? But again, when they do certain things, it's always like in moderation, yeah? But somehow, if they read a lot, it is okay, right? But now, if a child doesn't read the way we parents want them to read, okay? Now, that is another issue here that we have to look at. The child doesn't read enough according to parents' standards, or the child doesn't read enough because the child is not seen with a book.
Right.
Okay. Now, people read very differently. If they read, number one, they read because they want to impress. Sometimes a child reads because they want to impress the teacher, the parents, the friends. Yeah, or a child reads because the child has found joy in silent reading. Yeah, and children, they love to make believe. Yeah, they have just yet to discover the magic of reading. Yeah, and parents can always help them find that magic, that spark. Take them to a movie, The Lorax, Dr. Seuss, for instance, for very young children. It's about the environment. Yeah? But parents must pick up that book and read it together with the child and explain to the child. Or if you have a story and like The Land Before Time, yeah, it's about dinosaurs and all that. So that it has a very sad ending. Most children don't like that part. They want to stop the video once they come to that part. I don't want to see the mother die. They would say things like that. So why not then ask the child, if you were the author, if you were the writer, how would you have rewritten it?
Right.
You see?
Okay.
So you must engage the child in the activity.
Okay? Some people will have the tendency to sort of stuff books they don't like down their throats. how do you deal with that? You know your child doesn't like this sort of book, but you still insist that they have to read it. What could come out of that? I mean, of course, besides, of course, not liking or developing that interest when it comes to reading, what else?
Number one, I want parents to ask themselves, what's the wisdom in doing that? Forcing something they don't like down their throat. Yeah. You see, children, they learn from us. They are who we make them out to be. Yeah. And what they have, don't forget, their DNA is always made out of what the parents give them. Yeah. So if we start treating them that way, then they will, it is a democratic country, right? Even in any household, there must be an exercise of democracy. If you want to give them a book, and if you feel that that is a book they should read, you must explain to them why they have to read that book and make sure that is the level which they can handle. No point giving them something which is above their heads, you see. And many a time, I mean, for those of us who go to school, anyone who tunes into this station, I'm sure they have gone to school, right? Now, and if it's something they don't like to read, if they only have to find out why they don't like to read, is it because they don't understand? Is it because of the language? Or is it because a subject that simply doesn't interest them? So forcing is not a good way to encourage a good hobby or a good habit. Right? But if they could put it in another way, if you try it for 15 minutes, yeah, and tell me if you why, what is it that you don't like about this book? I can tell you what is it that I like about this book and see if you share the same. Mm-hmm. Then at least get them to read for 15 minutes and say, perhaps, Mom, I don't like the language. I find the name so difficult to pronounce. For example, Lord of the Rings. It's not everyone's cup of tea.
Right.
But there are some children who can digest the entire trilogy, but there are some who can just sit down in front of the rack and complete all the levels of Roda, you know, all the series of Roda. And I've seen children doing that, and they have done the Geronimo something. It just slipped my mind now, you know. And I've seen children and girls digesting Mallory Towers. You know, and during our days, our Nancy Drews and Hardy Boys.
Yeah. Sacred Seven. Yes. What sort of language appeals to children? Are they looking for simple language? Do they need beautiful language, rich language? Or does it depend on the child?
It really appeals to different... I mean, different children will find different books appealing. Yeah. I remember in my younger days, I have friends that will... fight over Mills and Boons. And there are some who would just fight over for Barbara Cartland because, you know, hers is always the knight in the shining armor, you know, and it's always very princessy, you know, and it's always very, something to do with the palace, you see. I've never read one of those books. I'm a Alfred Hitchcock person. And
so you never read Sweet Valley High, did you?
No. If you ask me, Jeffrey Archer, anytime. Grisham, anytime.
Should you stop reading to your child once the kids are able to read?
No, but if you find a nice paragraph these days, you don't really have to read it to them. You can always share it on Facebook. Right? That's one way to, you know... sort of connect with your children, yeah, and parents, you know, you have to be, you know, you have to convince your child or children that you'll be a good friend of theirs on Facebook. And the rule of the thumb with parents is, if you're listening into this, you know, to this, don't make comments. You can only like.
Oh.
Or if you want to make a comment, it should be a good one. Or do a private message.
We've all learned that the hard way. Coming up, we'll find out more about how, as a parent, you can be empowered to read and speak English to your child and improve, help them improve their command of the language. Dr. Elsie Chin, she's an English language trainer with me. If you have a question for her, send us a text message. The number is 016-201-9000 or tweet BFM Radio.
You're listening to BFM 89.9, the business station.
Good afternoon. It is The Bigger Picture and it's Mira Sivasodhi, Dr. Elsie Chin, English language trainer with me. We try to empower you as a parent and myself, I am one myself, to read and speak more English and hopefully to arm our children with a better command of the English language. I mean, it would apply to any language really, isn't it?
Esther?
Yes, of course.
You know, Esther, some say that children who are read to by their children at a young age can relate to the stories they hear, which enables them to more easily transition through new experiences. Would you agree with me?
Yes, reading actually starts from the womb, you know. It is called prebiotics, you see. I'm sure you have seen images of mothers in full-term pregnancy having an earphone, you know, to the belly, you see, sharing music, Mozart, you know, and reading. You see, reading is a habit. You have to cultivate it, yeah. And I'm not saying that you have to read certain things or certain books or certain subjects, you see. But again, it is something you have to cultivate. And if you want to pick it up as a hobby, I suggest you try it for 3 months. Anything that you do for 90 days will become a habit. You know, then you become a habitual reader. When you become a habitual reader, you become an independent reader. Being an independent reader will make you a lover of reading, mm-hmm. you see. But again, if parents do it with children, what I want to emphasize or share with parents would be... there's no point correcting the child every mistake the child makes, especially if it comes to reading aloud. Because eventually, it's not reading aloud that matters. It's finding joy in reading. And reading, we all know, you know, Francis Bacon says, funny, his name has got to have the word bacon in it. Reading maketh a full man. And we don't mean digesting every word that we read, right? So when a child reads... And if there are words the child doesn't know, just tell the child, replace it with the word blank. Or you could just jot it down and put a page number and then go back to it and do it together and check and look out for the word. And I will always emphasize that it is okay to read something and then not having paid attention, but the book skip. The pages, we keep flipping. This is called passive eye shift, yeah? Because the eyes and the fingers will move. You have finished reading all the sentences and then you just move on. But the brain is still trying to visualize the first few paragraphs, yeah, or the first few pages. And then you find that, you know, your fingers and your eyes, the focus have shifted. They are now looking at a different page and looking at different texts, you see. So that is when the brain is still trying to visualize, trying to make sense of what actually transpired when they were reading a page, if it's so exciting. That is when they lose themselves, consciousness. And then that's when they do not comprehend what they are reading, mm-hmm. see? So that happens. If that happens, just go back a few pages, you know, and start all over again.
But how does that help them transition through new experiences?
As in...
when you start to read to them at a very young mm-hmm. age and you start to relate stories and when mm-hmm. they hear them all the time, mm-hmm. it sort of helps them transition through new experiences. Do we have evidence of that?
Yes. I wouldn't say evidence of that as in something clinical or scientific, yeah? But have you seen how a child gets comfort from a pillow or a blanket that they're used to? Mm-hmm. Yeah, or even if it is just a blouse worn by the mother. And if someone else wears that and the child says, remove it, it's my mom's.
Yeah.
Right? Now, it's that familiarity. Is that sense. So if the mother reads to the child, and each time the child picks up, you realize it's the mother's voice that is always ringing in our heads, that, you know, you see that, and that, oh, that's my mother reads this to me, and it's a good thing, so I want to continue that. I want the memory of that experience, you see, and that's how it helps them to be independent readers. And when they become independent readers, when they become mothers, they do exactly the same thing.
Right.
Yeah. Okay. But if you use reading as a punishment, then I'm afraid, you know,
that's
you
probably
are
just, not going to work.
Yes, rubbing it the wrong way.
Sure. And for the parent of today, you know, who's trying to make ends meet and, you know, go to work and come back, you're exhausted. I mean, when do you even find the time to read? I mean, how do you schedule this? How do you suggest one schedule this into the everyday activity of your life as well as the children's?
Mm. It's a matter of priority. How you prioritize, you know, your schedule. Now, if parents are that poor, yeah, and if you know, they rather and literacy means to them, if I do this and if I read this, is it going to help me to raise better cows? Yeah, then I'm sure their reading needs are very different, right? And if we are talking about parents these days who say, oh, I don't have time to read to my child, the 24 hours is given, right? How would you prioritize that? If it is not on a work week, what about the weekends? Yeah, what about spending, just make sure in that week you will spend 1 hour, just 1 hour on nothing but books. And when you take them out to have a good meal, why not make the bookshop, you know, the first stop or the second stop? You know, we read, and after that, perhaps we could have a good meal. You know, there is always something which they can do, if not read the newspapers together over breakfast.
It's very interesting because a recent Australian study carried out by the Melbourne Institute of Applied Economics and Social Research. Now, they found that children 4 to 5 years old who are read to 3 to 5 times a week have the same reading ability as children who are 6 months older. And, you know, funny you spoke about poorer families or low-income or socioeconomically challenged families. Interestingly enough, the study also found that the positive outcomes occurred in children regardless of parental income, education level or cultural backgrounds. That is, children with poor backgrounds or parents of limited education or ability have the same benefit of being read to frequently. So it doesn't really matter. As long as they're being read to, they are benefiting to a very, very large extent. So even if parents can't read, teachers could do that. You know, volunteers could do that. I mean, many people can take on this role and actually help these children out. You know?
Yes, regardless, like the study says, it's regardless of your financial status in society. Yeah, we're talking about we can't help much if the parents themselves cannot read. Mm-hmm. Yeah, then you have to depend on third party. You have got to depend on the library, and you have to tell the child that, look, I need you to read because look at where it has gotten me, because I can't read. You know, and I don't want you to have to go through this. And, well, children who come from families like that, sometimes they are more precocious, I find. They do realize that it's not, they do not have this, what we call this entitlement mentality, you know, that, you know, I'm your child, it's your responsibility to provide me. They do realize that their parents work very hard and, you know, in order to give their parents a better life, I have got to do better. But what I want to stress is, I wouldn't want to tie reading or the ability to read or being able to read or getting your child to read a lot. I wouldn't want to tie that to, because it leads to better academic excellence. Okay, it should not be just academic. Mm-hmm. If parents said, reading, what does reading do to a person? Reading maketh a full man. A character excellence is something we want to look forward to. Yeah, we want wholesome individuals. We don't want mean people. Yeah, we don't want people who, because I read more, then I'm going to rule over you. That's not what we want. See, so again, to tell them, you read more, you get, you know, better grades or first girl, first boy in class, that's not the right way to push them.
We have a question from Kumar, who's asking, my 4-year-old daughter picked up English from the television. Is it okay to allow them to watch the cartoons, especially the educational ones, to improve English?
I don't see any harm in that. But of course, there is always this button called parental guidance. Yeah, and parents these days, I'm sure most of us have access to the internet, to Google. We should do a search and see if the language used in those cartoons would be suitable for our 4-year-olds. That is important. Having said that, because it is so easily accessible, yeah, the information, children pick up unfavorable words, you know, at a very tender age. Yeah. So again, we cannot avoid, but we have to tell them that we would not use those words because it's, you know, it's not in our culture, it's not in our family. In this family, we don't use tastes that are, you know, right, rather unfavorable.
Yeah. Elsie, you're the founder of a very prominent English language center in Malaysia. Based on the parents that you come in contact with, are they spending enough time? Or what's the attitude of parents towards reading? Now, do they come to you and say, this is your business now? I'm letting go. It is your responsibility.
I am proud to say to date, parents, we are the only language centres that have this parent-teacher meeting once every 6 months to tell the parents how the child has progressed. And also, not just to tell the parents the child's progress, but to do an evaluation and also to tell parents of our observations, yeah, of the child. And most of them are very receptive to our suggestions. But I have come across parents who felt that things should be done their way. Yeah. And that may not be the best way. Yeah. Because we're talking about putting a child in a language center, and of course, when you're talking about language, you have to talk to somebody. Yeah. So it is not the one-to-one that we want to encourage, but a community setup. You know, a class of maybe 10, 12, 15 students, because no point being able to talk to only one, isn't it?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Now, I do have parents who do not see their child often enough, and because they pay for the course fees, they come in and then they say, oh, I tried to talk to my child in English, but my child cannot answer me, you know. And of course, the parents spoke English poorly. Yeah. And I ask, how often do you speak English to your child? Oh, I don't. We only use Mandarin. And out of the blues, you decided to speak English to your child? And he said, yeah. So how do you want a 7-year-old to respond? Number one, you don't speak English like the teachers or like the English that he has learned. Yeah, you speak it, you know, very differently. And what goes on in the child's mind is, should I answer the way I've been taught? And then you'd be embarrassed? Or should I just keep quiet so that we spare, you know, both of us the agony? You see? So these are some of the things that go on in a child's mind.
Right. So what would you suggest in a situation like that, where the parent is not so, you know, not terribly good in English, and the child is now probably speaking
check
better
with
English?
The teacher. Yeah. How is my child doing in terms of reading? Or ask the child, what have you read today? Can you read something for me?
Mm-hmm.
Or just give something to the child and say, look, and again, it's a 7-year-old child. Don't give your contracts to the child to read, right? Find something and say, are you able to read this? Because I have problems understanding this. Can you help me? And because the child can discern, you know, if the parent speaks good English or not.
Yeah.
And then the child will gladly read it, you see. You see, it's not parents showing that they are parents and they are powerful, because there is an unspoken power that we reign over our child, right?
Of course. Yes. You know, Elsie, we're running out of time, but just a takeaway message for empowering parents to read and speak English to make sure our children are, you know, sort of beneficiaries of us being role models. What would be your message?
If you are parents and if you want to be empowered to read and speak English, there are three key objectives for doing so. One, you want to improve your English and expand your vocabulary, especially classroom settings language. And number two, you want to be able to read with or read to the child for about 20 minutes a day, if not try a week first. And thirdly, to be able to communicate with the school your child goes to find out the child's progress. You see, that is the first three key objectives or priorities of empowering yourselves as parents to read and speak English to your child.
Thank you very much for joining
me.
Dr. Elsie Chin, English language trainer on empowering parents to read and speak English on The Bigger Picture, BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, The Business Station.